Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Our series of conversations with the candidates concludes today and tomorrow with forums for the top two offices in the city of Baltimore. Tomorrow on Midday, in partnership with the University of Baltimore, WJZ-TV, and Baltimore Banner, we'll host a forum with Mayor Brandon Scott, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, former Maryland Deputy Attorney General Thiru Vignaraja, and businessman Bob Wallace. They are the leading candidates for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Baltimore. And today, it's a conversation with the candidates in the Democratic primary for Baltimore City Council president. Nick Mosby was first elected to the City Council in 2011, where he served for 5 years. He was appointed to the Maryland House of Delegates in 2017, and he won election as City Council president in 2020. Zeke Cohen is a former educator and nonprofit executive director. He has represented the 1st District on the City Council for the past 8 years. Shannon Sneed is a former journalist who served on the City Council from 2016 to 2020, representing District 13. She also ran unsuccessfully for City Council President in 2020 and for Lieutenant Governor in 2022. The candidates join me here in Studio A. You are welcome to pose questions to them by sending us an email. Our address, midday@wypr.org. So we'll begin with each candidate taking a couple of minutes to make the case for their candidacy. And Council President Mosby, let's start with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us on today. Baltimore, this election is a critical election. The folks that are my opponents, are amazing individuals. They're great to their communities, great to their family. They're really important to the city of Baltimore. But we understand and know that the rubber meets the road with this election. When we talk about this election, it's important to focus on the idea of comparing and contrasting. Having a leader, having an individual that has proven to show results, has proven to have success, and has proven to deliver for the citizens of Baltimore. And when you compare my record to my opponent's records, you can combine their records. Combined records pale in comparison to mine. I'm the council member who banned the box when it wasn't sexy from an ex-offender rights perspective of standing up. I'm the delegate who ensured that the Preakness stayed here in the city of Baltimore for generations to come. I'm the delegate who ensured that homes were no longer being taken from folks in our city because of water bills. I'm also the council president that's delivered local control back to the citizens of Baltimore and ensured that we have an inclusionary housing policy that we all can be proud of. This is what it's time for us to be extremely critical about, not just a great campaign ads, not just great endorsements, but really about delivering real results to the citizens of Baltimore. And I think when you look over my track record, that's exactly what I've done, and that's what I'll continue to do. I'm the only person from this race from Baltimore. I'm the only person from this race that has always lived my life for Baltimore, and I ask the city of Baltimore to continue to allow me to fight for you.
All right. Thank you, Council President. Shannon Sneed.
Hi, thanks for having me this afternoon. Listen, I am a transplant, and I think that's okay to be a transplant. I got my start and my opportunity because I was a journalist working at Fox 45, don't hold that against me, and then going to WJZ, writing stories and telling about all Baltimore. I'm a graduate of University of Maryland Eastern Shore and went to Morgan for my master's degree. I have been in Baltimore and in Maryland longer than I have been anywhere else. I'm raising my daughter here. I had all my firsts here, got married. My daughter's in Baltimore City's public school, bought my first home here. I'm doing everything that the generation before me asked me to do. Go to school, get a good education, and serve our community. And that's why I moved into East Baltimore. Listen, I believe that it's important when you say yes, tell about the record. Show that you have been working for the communities, and I've been a fierce advocate and a fighter. That's why I was able to pass to make sure that our top police commissioner lives in Baltimore City. I was also able to make sure that the mayor's cabinet lives in Baltimore City so they can experience and see all the things that we see as residents in Baltimore City. I expanded lactation accommodations. I was a young mother on the council, and I had to pump in nasty, dirty bathrooms and in my office. And so I thought about what were other women going through and experiencing. And so I also made sure that victims of police brutality had the right right to speak up. When you talk about fighting for our communities and leading with character, leading with integrity and transparency, I've been the person that has been doing this. And so I'm asking for the residents of Baltimore City to please consider me as your next city council president, because I've never been absent. I've always done the work of Baltimore City and making our communities proud. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon Snead and Councilman Zeke Cohen.
Thank you, Tom. I started my career teaching and working with kids for 9 years in West and South Baltimore. During that time, I brought students to New Orleans to help rebuild after Hurricane Katrina. I ran a nonprofit where our young people helped pass the DREAM Act and the Maryland Firearm Safety Act. But what sticks out most about my time as an educator was the deplorable conditions our kids had to learn in. My first school looked like a jail, and I remember the immense amount of trauma that my students endured. Well, I'm proud to say that as a city councilman in District 1, in partnership with our amazing state delegation and Mayor Scott, we rebuilt 4 brand new, beautiful 21st century schools. I'm proud to say that I passed the first law in the country of any city to address childhood trauma. I'm proud to have created an Office of Aging to honor our elders. Proud to have passed the Neighbors Against Illegal Dumping Act and the Transparency in Lobbying Act to crack down on illegal dumping and corruption. And I'm proud that my district grew by over 5,700 people in the last census. Look, I'm running for city council president because in 2024, in the greatest city, in the richest nation on earth, we still have schools that look like jails. We pay double the property taxes as our neighbors in Baltimore County, but we do not get double the city services. Last year, in the hottest summer on earth, we had 4 public pools that were unable to get open. It is unacceptable. Baltimore deserves excellent city services, meaningful legislation, and consistent oversight to demand better from our agencies. And that is what I will deliver as our next city council president. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Councilmember Cohen. So, Shannon Snead, let me ask you the first question that we'll ask each of the candidates to respond to, and this has to do with the budget. The city's obligation under the Kerwin education funding formula has gone up nearly 50% over the past few years. There's a group called Renew Baltimore that is working to get a referendum on the November ballot that would reduce property taxes in the city over a period of 6 or 8 years. Comptroller Bill Henry, who is like you running for re-election, although he's running unopposed, has said, quote, that has the potential to really put us in a sort of perfect storm. Did additional expenses like Kerwin, and at the same time, perhaps even mandated reduced revenue. Is he right?
He is right. I've said it over and over and over again that it would be a disaster. It would not be a good thing for that to happen. And I've said before, I've gone to their website to try to get the details to figure out exactly their plan and what they're trying to do.
You're talking about Renew Baltimore?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's very broad, and it's no details on the website. The other part of it is, it's like we as Baltimore City residents who live here, we are dealing with a tight budget. So what happens? What do you want to be cut, essentially? What happens when we're not able to spend the money on education? What happens when we don't have the money to make sure that when a person calls 911, that an ambulance isn't going to respond? Like, what? I don't understand. We are not doing everything that we can do the best of our abilities. There are still areas where trash is not picked up on time, where recycling just got back. It just doesn't make any sense, and it's very irresponsible for us to sit there to agree with them to say, let's cut property taxes without a plan to say that we're doing everything the best in Baltimore, and we just are not. So it's just irresponsible. I agree with the comptroller.
Well, the comptroller is, Zeke Cohen, saying that, you know, we really could be in a very, very tight squeeze here. The finance department has said that there's the likelihood of a $100 million structural deficit for this year, for 2024. So if this happens, if Renew, because you put a referendum on the ballot, would you like your taxes to go down? Most people are going to say yes. You know, I mean, that has a very good chance of passing. And, of course, the Kerwin obligations aren't going away. What do we do about it?
Yeah, look, I do appreciate the comptroller's work on this. I appreciate his endorsement in my campaign. I'll just say this, Tom, which is we do have to meaningfully reduce property taxes in this city in order to remain competitive as a municipality. However, I think that Renew is the wrong plan. I think this dramatic of a cut, essentially 40% of the general operating funds over, I believe, 7 years, would be devastating to city services in Baltimore. And I do just want to talk about why the Kerwin or blueprint legislation is so important. One of the things that is absolutely critical for Baltimore is that we have universal pre-kindergarten, starting with our three-year-olds. I have seen the impact that pre-K has had in my daughter's life, where she went from being this shy, awkward child to an absolute lovable diva under the tutelage of her great teacher, Ms. Kamenaris. We got into pre-K through the lottery. We know that kids' brains do the most growth, 0 through 5. It is absolutely essential that Baltimore moves in the way that DC and New York and other municipalities have done to have universal pre-K. And we're actually beating the rest of the state, by the way, in kindergarten readiness already here in Baltimore. We need to build on that. On the other end of the spectrum, we need to make sure we are not continuing to graduate high school students into poverty. Every single young person that graduates from a Baltimore City public school needs to have either a college or career plan. And that could be an apprenticeship. That could be something with the building trades. Whatever it is essential. And I'll just say that when I become council president, the days of saying that Baltimore City schools are someone else's problem, those days are over. We're going to take full ownership and accountability of the outcomes for our kids.
And Council President Mosby, when it comes to the budget, last time you were here, we talked about the fact that the city council now has some input into the budget that it didn't have in prior years. If we're facing, you know, as Bill Henry has suggested, you know, mandated revenue cuts and mandated expenditures, what will the role of the council be? What should the posture of the council be in that eventuality?
Well, first, you know, I would say that, you know, when the plan was announced, you know, I communicated that I had deep concerns about it. You know, at the fact of the matter is, you know, all
and
of us.
And the plan you're talking about is Renew Baltimore?
The Renew Baltimore plan. The fact of the matter is, you know, all of us have to focus on two critical things, and that's public safety, ensuring that folks in our communities feel safe in every single zip code, in every single part of our city, and more importantly, ensuring that we sustainably drive down crime by creating a educational system that we can all be proud of. And those are critical, and those are in jeopardy with a plan like Renew Baltimore. Because when we talk about such a huge hit to the general funds that supply and that provide the resources to go after these critical city services, that is of concern. The one thing I like to talk about this question is I think we get once in a lifetime opportunities. And I've been very vocal about the American Rescue Plan money, the $641 million. And to me, that was a way that we could responsibly grow our communities, responsibly grow our population, our tax base, to responsibly reduce the taxes that are plagued on middle class families all throughout the city of Baltimore. And when I talked about strategically coming together and providing affordable home ownership opportunities for particularly legacy residents that've had to deal with the crime, the grime, and the blight in our communities, you know, unfortunately, we were not able to get that bill out. Zeke Cohen was one of the folks that were against that bill, and he allowed $641 million to go to $500,000 here, $1 million there, all across the city to these nonprofits that have good work and that are doing good work, but from a strategic perspective, does not go after and create generational change. And that's exactly what we had the ability to do. We could tackle our vacant problems. We could tackle the crime and the blight in our communities if we did it in a strategic manner, and we just did not. We fumbled it.
All right, Zeke Cohen, would you like to respond?
Absolutely. So, yeah, you know, just to avoid some misinformation, I want to be clear with the listeners that there is one person who had complete control of the ARPA funds, and that is Mayor Brandon Scott. So the idea that Zeke Cohen chose to do one thing or the other is just factually inaccurate. The reality is that what I have said on the record, off the record, is that more of the ARPA money should have been invested into our workers. We know that in Baltimore and across the United States of America, we are facing a profound municipal workforce crisis. We see not enough folks in DPW, not enough firefighters, not enough EMTs, not enough police. And I think the $641 million that we were given by the American Rescue Plan Act could have meaningfully addressed some of the shortages that we see in the municipal workforce. That is where I wish that money had been spent. And that is what I will continue to push with groups like AFSCME and all of our essential workers, is to make sure we have what our workers not only need, but deserve. Those that have been picking up trash for us through a pandemic, they should have been the ones that received some of the benefits of the ARPA. And unfortunately, they were not.
And Nick Mosby, why is it that Brandon Scott, as the mayor, had, as Z Cohen is asserting here, you know, complete control? Why is it that the city council, that we, when we talk about a strong mayor system, which we have here, this brings up, because this has happened in other instances as well, the conduit deal with BGE, the redistricting, you know, where the mayor just gets his way because he or she is the mayor. Why is that?
It's charter control, and it's also the way that the Board of Estimates is structured. You know, that's why I've constantly called for the reconfiguration of the Board of Estimates, and me as your next city council president, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I think this question about ARPA really sets me apart from my opponents, and here's why, Tom. You know, I think that we could do a lot of great things with $641 million, like ensuring that we are temporarily creating jobs, or ensuring that we're temporarily providing better benefits. But this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and a tranche of money that once it's spent, it's gone, right? So we can either spend this money or we can invest this money. By spending this money, that's doing what my colleagues are talking, well, that's doing what my opponents are talking about doing of helping and supporting new jobs or benefiting and enhancing jobs. By investing the money, it's investing in people, ensuring that folks who are paying $13, $14, $1,500 in rent in our communities now can have a mortgage for $1,000, $1,100, or $1,200, creating generational wealth. This was a way for us to responsibly go after and tackle blight in our community, but also provide generational wealth for legacy residents of
Baltimore. All right, Shannon Snead, before we take a break, let me give you the last word. I mean, the fact of the matter is, the ship has sailed when it comes to ARPA. These monies have been allocated. So it's a conversation that could happen theoretically only. But when it comes to the mayor and the president of the city council, how do you see that relationship?
I'm still going to say that you still have to have a relationship and be able to work with one another. And that's the difference. I was able to get bills passed because I would make sure that I worked with my colleagues, that I worked with the mayor. That's what you have to do in order to have a good government system, is to make sure that you have the relationships, make sure that you guys can sit down, agree to disagree. But we're partners in this. We all want to make Baltimore City better. So no matter who the mayor is, I'm going to be ready to sit down to work with them. We may not agree on everything, but again, we want to come up with solutions that's going to make Baltimore better. And you can see that based on the legislation that I put in the past to get those things done. And I will continuously do that as the next city council president.
Today on Midday, we're holding a forum with the candidates in the Democratic primary for Baltimore City Council president. My guests are former City Councilwoman Shannon Snead, First District Councilman Zeke Cohen, and the incumbent City Council President Nick Mosby. To pose a question for our candidates, you can drop us an email, our address, midday@wypr.org. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WYPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, tomorrow on the show, as we just mentioned, join me for a debate with the top four Democratic candidates for mayor of Baltimore, Mayor Brandon Scott, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, former Maryland Deputy Attorney General Tharu Vignaraja, and businessman Bob Wallace. We'll talk about the issues in an event presented in partnership with WYPR, WJZ-TV, and the Baltimore Banner, as well as the Schaefer Center for Public Policy at the University of Baltimore. I'll serve as moderator with Denise Koch of WJZ and Emily Sullivan of the banner. Our coverage begins here on midday tomorrow at noon, and the debate will be broadcast tomorrow night as well on WJZ at 7 o'clock. And if you've just joined us today, my guests are the candidates in the Democratic primary for Baltimore City Council President. Zeke Cohen has represented the 1st District on the Baltimore City Council since 2016. Shannon Sneed represented the 13th District on the Council from 2016 to 2020. And they are challenging the incumbent, Nick Mosby, who was elected City Council President 4 years ago. You are welcome to join us. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. Councilman Cohen, your feelings about Harbor Place. The city council, including you, voted to revise the zoning to allow the plan that MCB Real Estate, headed by David Bramble, is proposing for the harbor. Don't need to tell you that it's a controversial plan. Where do you stand?
Look, I did vote to support the increased zoning, and I think that when we look at Baltimore's downtown and downtowns across the United States of America, we have a real problem, which is that office workers largely have not come back since the pandemic. And when we look at our downtown, we do see a lot of growth in the residential market, and I think having folks live downtown in the Inner Harbor is actually a good move for Baltimore City. I know there are some real concerns about the size of the buildings. To me, the challenge that I have with the plan is the public money that Mr. Bramble has suggested he's going to need to support it. I've heard the number $400 million thrown out. I just don't know where that part is going to come from, because we know that the state is facing some pretty significant financial headwinds, as is Baltimore City. And I'll just say my approach to development has been consistent, which is that Baltimore needs to grow its population. We were a city that was close to 1 million people, now under 600,000, but it needs to be a win-win and it needs to be a community-first approach. I remember a former developer who came to me when I won and asked me for an increased variance for zoning in my district in Harbor Point, and he wanted to go taller. And I said, I think that's great, but my commitment is that you need to first go talk to the communities around that area, but also I want to see a mandate for 30% local hire on this project, because I think that when we build Baltimore, we need to make sure that our folks are getting the jobs. Initially, he said no. That was the end of that meeting. But about 2 years later, he came back to the table and we signed an MOU and we continued to build in Harbor Point. And I'm proud to say that 30% of those jobs are going to Baltimoreans. We need development and we need to hold developers to high standards as we move forward.
And Nick Mosby, when people talk to me about the harbor, they say it seems like it's a rush job. There was a press conference in the beginning of March, and then from that press conference, Eric Costello, who represents the harbor, went back to city council, and there was a bill being considered by the council by that afternoon. I mean, it was happening. It seemed to be happening really quickly. How do you respond to that, and what's your take on Mr. Bramble's, you know, conception of the harbor?
Yeah, just to go over that timeline, the press conference was to announce the bill, so it was they were aligned together. That was the point of the press conference, that the bill was going to come in front of the council. You know, I think when we look at the amount of work that Chairman Costello has done with the town halls as well as with MCB and then with the legislative process, you know, there's been a tremendous opportunity for folks to weigh in. But the reality is, Tom, you know, this project doesn't happen without the citizens of Baltimore voting on it. This is a very unique development deal where it has to go in front of the voters. And in November, the voters will get to decide whether they want this to move forward or whether they don't.
What's your recommendation? How should they vote?
Well, my one vote will be yes. The fact of the matter is, we have to reimagine what downtown is. Downtown, through the struggle of coming out of COVID, has continued to rebound. But we understand and know that it has to go to the next level, and we need projects like this Harbor Place 2.0. That's out of the box, that brings more residential to increase public safety, to increase attractiveness, not just locally, but also regionally and nationally. The one thing I'll say real quick, Tom, is, you know, Baltimore's already at a competitive disadvantage when it comes to development. And again, when we talk about comparing and contrasting me to my opponents, is something called the Project Labor Agreement. Now, Shannon, she proposed the bill prior, and she's a huge supporter of it. And Zeke has become a huge supporter of it. But really, the prioritization of local hiring should be our goal. The prioritization of ensuring that our local businesses are at the table should be our goal. And what project labor agreements will do to local businesses, will do to local hiring, is really hurt that and really hurt development like Harbor Place. So, you know, I think that that is, again, when we talk about compare and contrast, that is a huge difference between the approach that I take and the approach that my opponents take.
And you and I have a different recollection of that press conference, because I thought it was to announce the design of Harbor Place, and then the bill came afterwards.
It was the same day.
Yeah.
That was the purpose of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Shannon Snead, what about this PLA, this Project Labor Agreement, and where do you stand on the suggestion by Mr. Bramble to develop the harbor with the 900 apartments right on the waterfront, et cetera?
So let's be clear. There's only one of us who has and is the city council president. And so to bring up PLAs, you are the city council president, so you can make an impact. All the ideas that you're talking about, you are that person who can make a difference if that's the case. Yes, I believe that we should have an agreement, and everyone should sit at the table and come up with a plan on how we're going to get a project done and what the terms are, what health insurance, all of the above. That is what the PLA is about. And so everyone should have a part of it. And so to me, because we already have major projects going on, and I don't see the people in my community in East Baltimore and where I currently live in West Baltimore on those projects. So many schools have been built, but those folks who live in Baltimore City haven't had a chance. And so I'm like, Mr. Council President, we don't have a PLA in play now, but they're not there. And so to answer your question, we definitely do need something done at the harbor. I believe that I am the only one, because I'm the only one that's a public finance candidate, can actually have this conversation without leaning to one side or the other, but to be fair and to listen. And that's what I've always done, and work with everyone to make sure that we have a good bill, a good product that's going to benefit the workers and the people of Baltimore City. And so when you look at what's going on down there, absolutely do we want development. Absolutely do we want to grow the harbor. Absolutely do we want tourists to come in and spend time and spend their dollars here. My husband runs a hotel in Baltimore City. That is essentially what's paying my bills right now. So I want to make sure that he stays employed so we can get to work, right? And we can pay our bills. So absolutely. Am I on point with the harbor in each and every terms? I do worry about having more housing down there when we are not selling out houses in all parts of Baltimore City and even downtown. Downtown is kind of vacant right now. And so are we doing our due diligence? And so as the only public finance candidate, the only one who is not taking any funds from any developer, from any unions, from any PACs, is all of the donations that I've gotten have come from individual people. And 85% of those donations have come from the residents right here in Baltimore City. To read more about it, please go to our website, ShannonSneed4Baltimore.com, and support the cause if you believe that big money should not be in our campaigns. Thank you.
If you just joined us, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're having a forum with the folks who are running in the Democratic primary for Baltimore City Council President. Nick Mosby is the incumbent. Shannon Snead and Zeke Cohen are challenging Mr. Mosby in this Democratic primary on May 14th. Early voting starts on Tuesday. Nick Mosby,
Tom, can I have a chance to rebut
sure.
some of the direct conversation from Ms. Snead? You know, first and foremost, you know, everything that she's talking about, she's right on the money, but we already can do that because of a law I passed. That's ensuring that through the procurement process, the city of Baltimore is able, when they put out bids, to factor in local hiring requirements, to factor in the proximity of the business being in Baltimore, factor in the amount of employees that the city already has, factoring in things like ex-offender, second chance programming that the employee is able to do. You know, the fact of the matter is we do not need PLAs to enforce that. You can enforce that through the procurement process, and that's currently on the books because of me. The fact of the matter is when we talk about local hiring, you can't say that we're prioritizing local businesses or prioritizing local hiring with a bill like PLA, particularly with the bill that Shannon wrote and the bill that Zeke supports. And here's why. Ask them how many union-specific companies, minority companies, are even in the city of Baltimore alone. Tell them to name five. They can't. Asked them how many of the employees for the building traders actually live in the city of Baltimore. They can't. But pushing and developing programs like the Dante Barksdale Apprenticeship Program, pushing and developing ideas around procurement reform. Again, when we talk about comparing and contrasting their policies, some of their rhetoric and their platitudes to actually what's going to make Baltimore work and actually connect our young folks to jobs and our communities to jobs is not through a PLA. It's through the books that we already, the things that we already have on the books, and the things that I've been fighting for as the presiding officer over the Board of Estimates every single development.
And Zeke Cohen, would you like to respond?
Yeah, look, I am always going to stand with working people, and I'm proud that in this campaign, working people are standing with me. We have support from the building trades, and that is because we have said that when there are big development projects, when there are jobs, we need to prioritize Baltimoreans. We need to do so at a prevailing wage. We need to make sure our folks are first in line to get that work. And that is critically important for our city. I'm proud to say that over in my district in Patterson High School, we have been forging a partnership between the Carpenters Union and Patterson to create a track for those young people. I'll just say this, when we do a PLA, it is going to be critically important that part of the agreement, which is what it is, a project labor agreement, is around local hire. That is my commitment, and we are going to get that done.
Again, Tom, this is just the rhetoric. So prevailing wage is already on the books. You know, no one from minority to local ABC contractors has an issue with Davis-Bacon. They're already willing to pay on that scale and paying on that scale. That's already on the books. This is more just rhetoric and platitudes. The reality is by us going down this path of PLA and having the ability to enforce everything that we want to come in pie in the sky, whether it be prioritization of ex-offenders, prioritization of local hiring, prioritization of folks that have their businesses here in Baltimore, we can already do that. The PLA play is just a way to put the union, a third party, in front of the line that if you ask any of the minority business that we're talking about or we ask any of the success of the pipeline associated with local hiring, it's never prevailed. Prevailing wage is already on the book.
It's no, first of all, this is nonsense because there is no bill that's on the table right now for this. So for us to have the conversation,
John Bullock introduced it.
Right, yes. And it's hearing, they have not had a hearing on it as far as I'm concerned. It's just been sitting there. No Correct. One has brought it up. So Correct. Unless there is actually a date for us to have it, this is nonsense. I feel like we need to talk about the issues that people are dealing with every day. The fact is that folks can't get jobs. We need to make sure that we have training. The fact is that folks, when they call down to City Hall, they feel like they're not getting a response. The fact is that they feel like government can't be trusted. They feel like no one is working for them. And that's the issue. That's okay. Why we're essentially.
We're going to leave the issue of PLAs. Now we're going to move to public safety. Zeke Cohen, GVRS, the Group Violence Reduction Strategy, is credited by Mayor Scott as the reason behind a pretty dramatic drop in non-fatal shootings and homicides, some 40% over the last 2 years. But there are upticks in other kinds of crimes. Should GVRS stay in place? Is that going to be sufficient to address the problems that we're having with robberies, assaults, carjackings, car thefts, et cetera?
Yeah, look, I do think it is. We are trending in the right direction when it comes to homicides and shootings. And I give a lot of credit to our state's attorney, Ivan Bates. I'm very proud of his support and his partnership in this race. I also give credit to Mayor Scott and the group violence reduction strategy. Here is what I would say is that not enough attention has been paid to some of the lesser crimes that nonetheless still drive people out of our city. I think about the precipitous rise in thefts of automobiles. I was the council member that when that crisis was occurring, brought together the police commissioner, the Department of Juvenile Services, the state's attorney, and demanded that they work together and stop pointing fingers at each other. I also, with council members from other cities, including Rochester and New York, where they've seen over a 500% spike in car thefts, wrote to the NHTSB to make sure that we are holding the federal government accountable to do a recall of these Kias and Hyundais that have been shown to be completely defective and are so easy to steal. And so I do think there is much more that needs to be done to enforce crimes that are not just low level or not just an inconvenience, but literally drive people out of our city. That is what I am going to do as City Council President while continuing to work closely with all of our partners. And I think the partnership is the key. All of our partners to drive down violence in Baltimore.
Right, Nick Mosley, before we take a break, let me have you weigh in on public safety. GVRS, will that continue? Should that continue? And is that by itself going to be sufficient to address these kinds of crimes that Mr. Cohen's talking about?
So first and foremost, the reality is if folks don't feel safe in our community, no matter what the numbers say, no matter what the stats say, that should be all of our priorities, an all-hands-on-deck approach. And when we talk about GVRS, it's not just patting ourselves on the back for this one program or this dip in the numbers, but this is just part of the overall equation, the larger equation. You know, crime, to sustainably drive down crime, it's not just with a program, it's not just with a blip or resources, but it's really about going after the roots of why crime takes place. And that's when we talk about ensuring that we're getting to our children before they get to the criminal justice system by providing real opportunities like the Dante Barksdale Apprenticeship Program, which we funded in the last budget for $1 million that Zeke Cohen voted against. That's also like ensuring that not only are we being tough on crime, but also being smart on crime. So how can we be a little smarter? You know, for our young folks that are currently under home monitoring that are wearing ankle bracelets, during the time hours of school, where should they be? In school. And if they're not, that should send a red flag. For our young folks that are required to go to wraparound services and diversion programs, if they're not going, that should send up a red flag. So it's also about us ensuring that we don't allow our young folks, because of the failures of us and us not moving in the right direction and having an effective and efficient relationship with state government, ensuring that we provide opportunities to eradicate and get to them before they go to that next level of crime. That's what all of us have to be partners on and continue to push. And as City Council President, we can show that for the first time in 125 years that the City Council not only cut from the mayor's budget, but redirected spending. And we redirected that spending towards public safety, particularly providing more opportunities for our young folks and public safety as it relates to providing better apparatus and resources for our law enforcement.
And we got 20 seconds before we need to take a break. Look, Zeke Cohen, this apprenticeship bill, he mentioned that specifically.
So first off, I voted for the bill originally. I voted against the city's budget in large part because this council president cut $500,000 from our housing inspectors. And when I go around our city and see the conditions that some of our elders are living in senior housing, it is completely unacceptable. To cut housing inspectors, to me, was the ultimate slap in the face of our elders. And I could not support that budget.
All right, we got to take a break. My guests are the candidates in the Democratic primary for Baltimore City Council President, incumbent Nick Mosby, former Councilwoman Shannon Sneed, and Councilman Zeke Cohen. Join me here in Studio A. When we come back after a quick break, we'll take some of your emails. Our address, midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us today. Early voting in this year's primaries begins Thursday. Primary day is 2 weeks from tomorrow. Nearly 13,000 Baltimore Democrats have already submitted their mail-in ballots. More than 700 Republicans have already voted. If you want to vote by mail, you have until a week from tomorrow to request a ballot by mail or by fax. And if you request your ballot via the internet, you have until Friday, May 10th. If you've just joined us today, I'm speaking with the candidates in the Democratic primary for the second highest office in the city of Baltimore, City Council President. Many City Council Presidents have been elected or appointed mayor. Four of the last five mayors served as City Council President before assuming the city's top job. My guests today all served or are currently serving on the City Council. Shannon Sneed served one term from 2016 to 2020. Zeke Cohen is in his second term after first being elected in 2016. Nick Mosby served on the council from 2011 to 2016. He was elected Council President in 2020. They join me here in Studio A. We'll try to get to some of your email questions. Our address, midday at at WIPR.org. And Shannon Snee, before we move on to a different topic, a quick weigh-in from you on public safety and the GVRS.
So I believe that all public safety goes back to education to me. Listen, people don't feel safe when they are going out their homes. They go back in before it gets dark. The reality is, perception is reality, right? So we may be saying that the numbers are down, and we are glad that the numbers were down for last year when we ended the year. But the reality is, we need people to actually support businesses in Baltimore City. We need people to come out their doors, but they're not going to do it if they don't feel safe. And so that's why I say we have to focus on education. And to me, when we invest in our students and our youth, to make sure that those young people have the opportunity to get into, as we say, good opportunities, positive things, our city is in a much better shape. And so I say we got to make sure that our parents are involved in our students' lives. I feel like it all starts at home. I was raised by a single parent. I should have been a statistic, as they say, but I made it out of my community. I was able to do good things because of my mother, who worked really, really hard. But the reality is she was very involved in what we did, my sisters and I. And she made sure that we made it to school on time. She made sure that we were involved in positive activities. And I think that's the same thing that needs to happen. Right now, when you look at what happens in school, most parents cannot make it to these parent-teacher conferences because they end at 5 o'clock. Most of our households are headed by single parents, and they don't get off of work until 5 o'clock. So we have to make sure that we're working with our schools so they realize that there are other ways to engage our parents. And so we also need to utilize doing Zoom calls. We need to make sure that we're picking up the phone and speaking with folks. And to me, that will make a difference when you talk about public safety. And of course, we want to make sure the programs are working, back to your question. And so if we are having hearings and comparing the numbers, and that's what people want, they want to make sure that as taxpayers that these programs do work, and it's investing the money and have adherence to make sure that we can compare and contrast to make sure that it's worth our money.
All right, we have some questions from listeners. Zeke Cohen, this is an email from Jill, who talks about pilots and TIFs. Those are mechanisms that are given to developers. Given the fact that office workers are not returning to the office, why is the city still using pilots and TIFs to subsidize areas outside of downtown Baltimore, like the Peninsula and Harbor Point? Are pilots and TIFs a good mechanism to spur development?
So, look, I think they can be in the right circumstances. I will say that I was not around for either of the two that you mentioned. But what I will also say is that I do think we need much more scrutiny on tax incentives, whether it's pilots or TIFs. And I was incredibly disappointed that when Councilman Ramos proposed a bill to essentially study and figure out what we have gained or lost through our pilot and TIF program, that that bill died in committee. As a city council, we should be searching out truth. We should be doing critical inquiry. And when I look at how some of the tax incentives have been concentrated in areas that arguably don't need them at the expense of East and West and South Baltimore, to me, that's unacceptable. And again, it shouldn't be a zero-sum game. We need growth in all of our areas. I'm extremely proud of how my district, Southeast Baltimore, has grown through partnerships, through investing in green space in Patterson Park and Dipsky Park, through rebuilding our schools. But we do need to be critical and thoughtful in how we are using public subsidy. And so to see a bill that just sought to do a study to try to figure out what has happened with our TIFs and our pilots die in this council was very disappointing. And that is not what folks can expect when I become council president.
It's so unfair for Councilman Zeke to throw Councilwoman Odette Ramos under the bus or any of his other colleagues. The fact of the matter is the administration came up with a pilot tax reform committee that Councilwoman Odette Ramos shows up to every single time to participate in. She's been in all of the first three meetings. So the idea that no work in City Hall is happening under this watch, and the idea that she just simply allowed her bill to die in committee, is so unfair and grossly inaccurate. What I will say is, you know, Zeke Cohen hasn't showed up to any of those meetings. Zeke Cohen hasn't showed up to any of the Board of Estimates meetings. Zeke Cohen barely shows up to any of the legislative oversights meetings. If he comes to look and then leave to go fundraise and do all this other stuff he's been doing for his campaign. We need council members, and particularly a council president that's going to show up. And I think it's the rhetoric, it's the platitude. It's like calling out Councilwoman Odette Ramos for allowing her bill to quote unquote die in committee. It's just completely not the type of leadership that we need in City Hall to not just to talk about things during a campaign, but actually do the work. And I think there's several members on the council that have constantly done the work. As president, I've shown up every single day in the face of adversity, in the face of personal challenges. Every single day I've shown up, I've done our job, and we've done historic things.
We do have a number of questions about those personal challenges and the adversity.
I know.
Yep. Lisa says, how can we trust you as council president to ensure that the city spends our money appropriately in light of your inability to manage your own personal finances? You have great questions about your latest campaign finance report. You had problems with the water bill that didn't get paid for some months. You obviously had problems with taxes and stuff. You were even accused when you were testifying in a trial for your former wife of misrepresenting your charitable donations and your income tax return. So when it comes to the reasons that those challenges happened, let me give you a chance to respond to that.
I think it's critically to say again, you know, through the face of adversity and challenges, I've showed up and done my job every single day. You know, personal things have happened in my life, whether it's with family members or with other things, are personal. But when you decide to run for public office, those things and maybe the byproducts of those things sometimes become public. And that's exactly what took place. But again, I think what's critical is when we look at the leadership that I've had, not just in Annapolis, but also in City Hall, during the time of this adversity and these challenges, I've stepped up and I've always done my job, whether it's bringing local control of our police department back to the city.
But I think people are wondering why the challenges happened in the first place.
So, you know, there aren't. Sometimes people grow up in situations where we don't have trust fund accounts, where we didn't grow up in Western Massachusetts, where we don't have access to certain things in life. You know, I tell folks, you know, I grew up in a 3-bedroom house with 6 women, man in my house since I was day one. You know, first person in my family to graduate from college. I watched my mother as I shared a bedroom with my older sister every single day get up at 4:30 to catch 2 and 3 buses to put food on our table. When I graduated from college, the first person in my family to do so, my biggest purchase was a car. It was for my mother. You know, when we talk about student loans and student debt, when we talk about being the breadwinner for your family, things happen. I decided to run for mayor at that particular time, and I don't regret it. But unfortunately, it put me in a financial situation that I just couldn't handle at that time. And I wasn't man enough to speak up and deal with my wife about it. Obviously, that is spewed out all across federal court. And I understood and knew that that's exactly what they were going to attempt to do to me because I testified. The reality is we're running for a job to do our job. And me serving as Board of Estimates, me presiding over the city council, when it was time to do my job, I showed up and showed out every single time. To promote a council member who has not showed up to a Board of Estimates meeting, who does not participate in legislative oversight, who struggles to get other council members to endorse or support him, is a problem. And that's what we're seeing here in this clear compare and contrast.
All right, Shannon Snead, let me ask you about bike lanes and transportation. This is something on a lot of people's minds, and we're going to finish up here because we're running out of time.
Okay, well, I am a one-car household, so I often get on the trains and the buses. I would say that I even have my daughter on the buses and the trains, and people often look at me like I'm crazy. My husband rides bikes in Baltimore. He actually fell off a bike in Baltimore.
Do you think complete streets is a good idea?
I actually voted for complete streets, so I support that we should have different modes of transportation and it should be safe. I think what you're hearing from people is that they are not a part of the process. We rolled it out during a pandemic, and so a big part of it is community engagement, and we have done a horrible job with engaging our communities. And so we got to make sure that when we roll out big projects like this, you have to have the community involved in the process. Okay. You just can't take away parking and think it's going to be okay.
And Zeke Cohn, we just have a few seconds left. Your final thought?
Yeah, look, one thing I'm not going to do is attack the incumbent in this race because Baltimoreans are tired of mudslinging. We're running a positive campaign. I'm proud of my record. I'm proud of what we've been able to accomplish and the coalition we're building. And I'm going to continue to fight for Baltimore.
Zeke Cohn is a city council member representing District 1. Nick Mosby is the incumbent Baltimore City Council president. Shannon Snead is a former council member who represented District 13. I appreciate all of you coming in. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Hall. You've been listening to Midday. Have a great day.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.